I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And like all Fridays, we bring in attorney Keith Figured for Do I Have a Case of the Figured Law Group. Keith, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show this week.
How you doing, Rob? Hope you had some nice time with your family, and glad to be back.
Yeah, that indeed. So let's get right to it today. The first one's a little in-depth there. A few years ago, I took a signing bonus for a three-year commitment with a healthcare facility as an MRI technician and left for another job shortly after my one-year anniversary. It has been a year and a half since leaving, and the facility just contacted me to refund the bonus. I can understand it after a short period, they could have requested it back, but can they request this after such time has passed? So it looks like they received some sort of signing bonus for a three-year commitment, ended up breaking that commitment, but a year and a half went by before they demanded that money back. So,
all right. So here we have to look at a couple things. I mean, the first thing is whether or not there was or wasn't a contract. But to determine whether a healthcare facility in PA can recover a signing bonus from an MRI technician, we have to look at, like I said, a couple things. And that's specifically what I'm going to go through is without a contract, with a contract, if there's a potential contract, and some of the federal laws that may or may not apply. So starting with the scenario with a contract, so if there is a contract, a judge isn't going to go outside the four corners of a contract. Whatever that contract states is going to most likely apply. Now, there are some exceptions. The contract cannot be unconscionable. There has to be clarity, meaning the repayment obligation must be clearly stated, including the amount, conditions for repayment, and any proration formula. Also, the pertaining to unconscionable, I think if they try to claim the entire amount as opposed to proration, that might look more as a penalty, and the courts might not side with that. But the bottom line is if there is a contract, they're going to want to bring that to an attorney so that they can go through the contract and see what their applicable rights are. Now, even though it is a year and a half, for purposes of a contract, the statute of limitations in PA is 4 years. So since it's only 1.5 years ago, that means that the facility's claim is still within the statute of limitations, and they can still pursue that if they want to. And the way they would have to pursue that is either by breach of contract. Now, there is a what's called wage payment and collection law. But that is specific to earned wages and benefits and does not create a substantive right to compensation like signing bonuses. Where that will come into play later is in the absence of a contract. And then now what I found particularly interesting is that there's Fair Contracting for Healthcare Practitioners Act. Now this was just, looks like 2025, so I don't know if this would be applied retroactively. But that being said, that law, which was effective January 1st, 2025, allows employees to recover reasonable expenses such as relocation, training, or patient-based establishment from healthcare practitioners like MRI technicians if the expenses were incurred within 3 years before separation. So again, you'd have to look at the contract, and if the signing bonus fell under that category and was directly tied to such expenses, that could also potentially limit recovery. And then again, because this was only implemented in 2025, there's a question of whether it would apply retroactively. Now, coming to the second scenario, in the absence of a contract, and under the first scenario, that would be more likely the scenario with the contract that the facility would be able to recover. However, in the absence of a contract, that's going to make it much more difficult. In that situation, basically the facility would have to argue an oral or implied contract. And as I said before, the wage and a WPCL, without a written contract, the signing bonus may be considered earned compensation under the WPCL once paid, especially if no repayment conditions were explicitly communicated. So in the absence of a contract, that in of itself might be able to preclude it. So bottom line is, it's probably going to be best that if she did receive that, she takes it to an attorney. If there was a contract, she wants to make sure she has the contract with her. If there was no contract, then she wants to advise the attorney of that. And as I had indicated, again, I don't know if that one act that was just implemented in 2025 would apply retroactively, but if she did have any costs associated, that would fall under that, and it did apply retroactively. That may also preclude some of the recovery.
All right. On to the next question, and it's these short questions that you scare me the most. Can you explain tort coverage as far as car insurance benefits?
Sure. So in Pennsylvania, auto insurance tort coverage is a critical component of a driver's policy. And the reason for that is it determines their ability to seek compensation for specifically non-economic damages, which is pain and suffering, loss of life's pleasures, those types of damages after, whether it be a car accident in this specific incident, since we're dealing with the tort limitation. But Pennsylvania options as a choice no-fault state. What that means is that the drivers can choose between two tort options, a full tort and a limited tort coverage. Now, the full tort coverage, as it says, full tort grants unrestricted rights to sue an at-fault driver for both economic and non-economic damages. In that situation, there's no injury threshold or anything to prove in order to seek compensation for your injuries. Now, in contrast, limited tort coverage restricts the ability to sue for non-economic damages, which again are the pain and suffering, loss of life's pleasures. And the only way you can exceed that limitation is you have to meet what is the serious injury threshold. Now, there are some exceptions. In the event that if you do have limited tort, is again the serious injury threshold. In that specific instance, injuries resulting in death, significant deformity, or serious impairment of bodily function basically need to be proved in order to overcome that threshold. The other exception is drunk driver. If an at-fault driver is convicted of driving under the influence or accepts accelerated rehabilitative disposition, then even if you're limited tort, you can go after them as a full tort election. Uninsured driver, if this driver is uninsured, if it's an out-of-state vehicle that is at fault and registered outside of Pennsylvania. Commercial vehicle, if you are injured as a passenger in a commercial vehicle, a pedestrian or motorcyclist, unregistered vehicle owners, and I believe children also enjoy unlimited tort protection. That I have to confirm, but I'm pretty sure they do. Now, the one thing that's important to understand about the election, whether it be limited tort or full tort, is that it's protected because you are giving up your rights. So in Pennsylvania, the tort election process is governed under the vehicle code. And under the vehicle code, if you don't explicitly choose an option, then the default option is full tort. And the reason for that is it's to presume you have selected full coverage, which ensures you retain maximum legal rights. Now, in order to waive the full tort, you actually have to be provided a signed waiver, which is required to advise you what you're giving up, and you actually have to sign that. The named insured has to sign that. And in the absence, I've had cases where we've had clients where the insurance company has indicated that the individual selected the limited tort option, but they couldn't select the waiver. So in the absence of them being able to produce that waiver, it reverted back to the full tort. So why would somebody pick a choose the limited tort option? Because it's approximately 10 to 15% savings. But to be honest, that 100 or so in savings isn't really worth the risk. So, I mean, would be my, and I think as most legal experts and law firms overwhelmingly recommend, full tort for most drivers, especially those with families, frequent drivers, or those in high traffic areas, that the small premium savings of limited tort are often outweighed by the risk of uncompensated injuries. So, but if you have any questions, you can also speak with your insurance rep. But I would always recommend that you carry the full tort, given the risks and benefits.
And the final question for today: my business has been negatively impacted by municipal construction, where I have a documented 60 to 70% loss of traffic into my store. I understand the need for infrastructure improvements, but there has been delays by subcontractors, which the municipality says is out of their control. Do I have any recourse?
Hey, so this is obviously a complicated issue because you're dealing with a municipality which has governmental immunity. So really the recourse is going to be either between the municipality or the contractors. The issue with the contractors is, and I'm assuming he's not a party to the contracts, which means he lacks privity in order to go after those contractors, and it's unlikely he would have recourse. So the only potential recourse that he may have is if he can pursue one against the municipality. Now, the only potential, now there's a couple, but most of them didn't even come close to applying. The only one that closely applied and could apply, but in this scenario too, now the reduction in 60 to 70% loss of traffic doesn't necessarily amount to a loss in profits. In any of these recoveries that I'm going to discuss, whether it's under the what is called the inverse condemnation and then potential insurance claims. There are potential insurance claims, but regardless of the claim, the business owner is going to have to substantiate in documentation an actual loss in profits as opposed to just the loss in traffic. Now, under the inverse condemnation claim, if the construction effectively takes the client's property by denying reasonable access, basically what that is a claim under the eminent domain code. So courts have recognized loss of access as compensable taking in cases like McCracken, City of Philadelphia, and that was specifically dealing with prolonged construction blocked business access. However, as I had indicated in that case, the client had to prove that access was substantially impaired, which in this case they may be able to, but they also must quantify the profit losses and show the impairment was more than temporary inconvenience. And the problem here is, being that that's a contract and it is going to be temporary, that's probably going to be between proving the profit losses and the fact that it's not a permanent inconvenience as opposed to a temporary are going to be the two, I think, roadblocks that they have to overcome. So, but that being said, the only potential other way to pursue is through the insurance, and there are what's called insurance claims for business losses under business interruption insurance. The problem with that is that it usually only covers peril, which is like fire, flood, or actual physical damage. Civil authority coverage, now that is one area that there may be a possibility for coverage. And the reason for that is it covers losses when government action, such as road closures, restrict access. So in this instance, they would want to review their policy and take that to an attorney, and they would need to evaluate whether or not they could substantiate any of these claims, whether it be against the municipality or potentially under some insurance that they may have.
All right, Keith, if someone wants to get in touch with you and may have a question offline that they don't want to make public, how can they do that?
They can contact me directly at 570-954-9299. They could send me an email through, they could send me an email at keith@figuredlaw.com, or they can contact me through my website at figuredlaw.com.
All right, and if you have a question you want featured on a segment of Do I Have a Case, you can email me at rob.odonnell@odyssey.com, and we'll be sure to get those questions to Keith on a future segment. Keith, you have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us this week.
You as well, Rob. Always a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 527, almost 528 here. I am seeing some news that Democrat Lackawanna County Commissioner Bill Gaughan has confirmed today that he wants the state Supreme Court to hear the appeal of his and the county's recent Commonwealth Court loss in the legal dispute over replacing former Democrat Commissioner Matt McGloin. Well, here's the thing. The two courts now already have stated very clearly that he does not have the authority to bring these cases. But yet here he is again appealing it to the state Supreme Court, or looking to appeal it. Now, they don't have to accept it. But at which point is the court going to grow a spine and say, listen, you are now personally responsible for this. We've told you you do not have the authority to bring this case. You cannot act unilaterally as a county commissioner. But yes, it's easy to make these decisions when you're not footing the bill. So somebody needs to tell this little guy that you'll be held responsible financially, at which point do the taxpayers made whole. And listen, his obstruction of the continuity of government is only going to result in no budget being passed, the reassessment certification stalling, county operations grinding to a halt, and the taxpayers need to be made whole by his abuse of what now two courts have said he does not have the authority to do. And make no mistake, there has been business as usual because there has only been normal business. We are getting closer to having to get a budget done. The certification of the reassessment is going to need to be done. None of that is going to happen the way things currently stand without three commissioners. It's not going to happen. And it's all because Bill Gaughan has lost some power, and he's grasping on with his fingernails to whatever he can keep. And it's easy to do. And you need to remember this, Lackawanna County. You need to remember this because, listen, this isn't his thing. This isn't his only goal. He followed the golden path here in our area. You know, school board, city council, county commissioner. There'll be some sort of state run, or hopefully he gets laughed at if he tries anything further than that. You know, somebody will be done with their state position, and he'll be, well, before this happens.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
And I would say it, but he's announced with his own party now. But at what point do the courts come in and say, listen, enough's enough. If you're going to continue this nonsense after two courts have already told you that you don't have the authority as a sole commissioner to do this, to use the solicitor, to use all the time that's going on with this, to have an outside law firm, that's under retainer, but believe me, we've wasted through that when it comes to things that the county actually needs, county business. You know, they won't be available. We have to get charged extra for. And we're assured that the county will not be, by the other county commissioner, Chris Chermak, that the county will not be paying those bills. All right, well, then there's a lawsuit, and the law firm then just sues, and a court says we have to. And at the end, well, we tried, and we're still the ones paying. Don't forget this. He obviously has further aspirations, and he needs to pay the penalty for this nonsense. Let the process move forward. Let's get a third county commissioner. Let the continuity of government in the county continue. But it's going to be very shortly as things start grinding to a halt. And he'll look to point fingers and blame, well, you know, that we could get these things passed, but they won't. No. You're attempting to hold on to power by your fingernails. And it's about time you start feeling the consequences of that. And it's going to mean people's lives here in Lackawanna County as far as their jobs, payroll for the county, things like that when a budget doesn't get done. When school districts can't come up with their numbers because a reassessment was not certified. When tax bills can't go out because it's at a stalemate. These things are coming very quickly on the horizon. Listen, we're at August 1st already. It already should be budget time. Do you think Bill Gaughan is sitting down with Republican Commissioner Chris Chermak to work on a bipartisan budget? No, you know damn well they're not. You know damn well he's not. We'll keep monitoring this. We'll see where it goes. But this is just a waste for nothing but a grasp for power. It's 5:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Hey there, friends. It's Friday, August 1st, 2025, and we're rolling into the weekend with some good vibes, a few surprises, and a lot to celebrate. First off, happy Colorado Day. That's right. Back in 1876, Colorado became the 38th state in the Union. So if you're in that centennial state today, crack open a cold one, hit the hiking trail, and just admire those beautiful Rocky Mountain views. Colorado, we salute you. Now, today is also World Wide Web Day. celebration of the glorious invention that lets us stream our favorite shows, video chat across continents, and scroll endlessly through dog videos at 2 a.m. Hard to believe the internet went public just over 30 years ago. Now look at us, ordering groceries from smart fridges and asking our watches for the weather. The Jetsons are jealous. In space news, yes, space news, NASA Artemis III mission continues prep for the first woman and person of color to walk on the moon. The launch is still months away, but training footage dropped this week and gives serious next generation vibes. We're going back to the moon, and this time we're doing it with flair. Back here on Earth, the heat wave might have us sweating, but the cities like Chicago, Atlanta, and Philly are getting creative, hosting cool zones in libraries, museums, even subway stations. It's a beautiful reminder of how communities come together when temperatures rise, literally and figuratively. And speaking of rising, how about the summer concert tours? Taylor Swift just extended her record-breaking ERAS tour one more time. Beyoncé's surprise EP dropped this morning. An indie artist and packing out smaller venues coast to coast. Live music is back in full swing, and it's electric. And before we wrap, something to smile about. A 9-year-old in Michigan went viral this week for creating a kindness vending machine at his school. No candy, no chips, just handwritten compliments and challenges like make someone smile today. That's the kind of energy we need heading into August. So whether you're road tripping, beach bumming, or just soaking up the summer air, keep that curiosity burning, check it on your people, and find joy in the little wins. Because every week, even a hot headline heavy one, give us something to celebrate. That's your Friday roundup. Stay cool, stay kind, and I'll catch you on the bright side of the weekend. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Couple things going on since it is vacation time. This is from earlier today. There was a level 3 mass casualty incident at Ocean City, Maryland. A carbon monoxide leak at the Ashore Resort and Beach Club right on the coastal highway sent at least 20 people to an area hospital, prompting a massive multi-agency emergency response. Guests and staff were exposed to high CO2 levels in the lower mechanical guest areas. Symptoms included dizziness, nausea, unconsciousness for some, and shortness of breath. Patients have been taken to multiple area hospitals to be given oxygen therapy. They believe that the leak was tied to a faulty boiler or HVAC system, and the building has been evacuated. The Maryland State Fire Marshal Office is leading an ongoing investigation there. So if you have anyone who was in Ocean City, Maryland, I'm sure you would have heard something by now, but you may want to check on them. You know, I know some of our areas, usually closer to the end of the school year, do their senior trips and such to Ocean City, Maryland. But if you have anybody down in Ocean City, Maryland, again, nothing serious. They were just taken for precautionary reasons and for some oxygen therapy if they were exposed to carbon monoxide. But a level 3 mass casualty incident in Ocean City, Maryland, on a Friday before what looks like it's going to be a great weekend. So CO, not CO2. Is that what I said? CO, yes, CO levels. So you want to check on anyone that you have down there just to make sure, because you never know. I'm sure even if they were near it, it was unnerving seeing a mass casualty incident there. We also have our Senator, John Fetterman, is going to be releasing a memoir called Unfettered. I like this. Fetterman Unfettered this fall, looking at political and health battles that he's dealt with. I find this strange. I wonder if he is planning on running, and I don't think he's been asked as such, and he has time left. But in the memoir, the Democrat will open up about his rise from mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania to national fame, dives into his physical and mental health issues, including his stroke in 2022, his clashes with both Republicans and members of his own party. A matter of fact, he's worked more closely with Senator McCormick, the other Pennsylvania senator, than I've seen him work with any Democrat in the Senate, which is a good thing for us in Pennsylvania. It truly is. It's going to be a deep dive where he reveals for the first time the full story of his life and career marked by battles from his work with community leaders to in revitalizing Braddock to his recovery from the stroke and mental health issues to where he was taken to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center where he says nearly ended his life. So it's supposed to be raw and visceral. The memoir's unapologetic account of an unconventional life and a reminder that public service comes in many forms and vision for fighting the battles that matter that divide the country. Again, with all this information coming out and seeing what I see of John Fetterman, agree with him or not, and most of the stuff I don't agree with him on, I do believe he's genuine. I do believe he's upfront and honest. And I think that will be weaponized against him in this memoir by both Democrats and Republicans. So it's a strange mix of those around him allowing this to happen. And by allowing it, I mean not advising him and coaching against it. Now, they may have very well have, and he decided, well, this is the story I want to tell, and it's his life, and that's his right to do it. And it's just more so of him being genuine that I talk about. I do think there is almost no doubt he's going to be challenged by not only his own party, but by Republicans. And we'll see what that entails when the time comes. I don't think someone like a Pennsylvania senator, a battleground state, which is becoming closer and closer to being, a 50-50 purple state, especially by the time this election takes place, helps the Democrat Party as a whole nationally, to have a fight here in Pennsylvania, a state that they desperately need if they want nationwide offices like the presidency. So it's going to be interesting. I think there's enough. Someone like a Summer Lee, a representative in Pennsylvania that is a member of the squad, I could see her attempting to step up. Does she gather the support that even someone like a John Fetterman gained during his general election? I don't think so. I think it will just be another example of the craziness that has become the Democratic Party, that they've allowed to take over their party. I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see indeed. One of the other things was a local story that grabbed my eye. Lackawanna Trail officials are tackling an e-bike safety for a smoother ride. Officials aim to address the growing safety concerns posed by e-bike riders on the Lackawanna River Heritage Trail. Now, we talked a little bit about this yesterday with the adjacent to the Heritage Trail, them putting the canoe and kayak ramps in from Carbondale to Mayfield. Cell phone videos captured by a rider on the Lackawanna River Heritage Trail show officials say disrespectful electric bike riders. Now, this isn't only the Lackawanna County Heritage Trail. I've seen this on the streets of Scranton. I've seen it everywhere. They zip across the intersections when I cut through German Mayfield. They literally are everywhere. Now, the story does go in that there are adults that enjoy their evening stroll on their e-bikes down the Heritage Trail. There are simple answers, but enforcement and curtailing the behavior is not so simple. In the same area, especially of the Heritage Trail up by me, there's ATV riders and dirt bike riders, and it goes the gamut. Now you have these e-bikes. And these e-bikes run the spectrum to things that go 10, 15 miles an hour to ones that go 40 miles an hour. They are all over if you've ever gone out to California, Mission Beach, or places like that. The rentals of these things where you just scan a code and you rent it for an hour or so and drive them. are all over the place, but trying to navigate them and trying to walk or on these places that are packed with tourists. And then you have these e-bikes and these e-scooters and everything zipping around. It is a problem, and it's a growing problem. In New York City, it's a problem hitting crisis levels. Hopefully, we come up with some sort of answers here and some sort of enforcement here before it becomes too much of an issue. But, just when we were downtown for Scrantastic, they were zipping around on these things through the crowds and running into people time and time again. Now, yes, they would apologize when they did it, but you're putting yourself in a position. And I saw the same individual do it three times until finally, they were observed by law enforcement. Law enforcement came right over and says, hey, you can't be doing this. And they obliged. So where's the balance? Where's the answer? I mean, these heritage walking trails, especially up in this area, they're very nice. They're a nice area, a safe area to walk where you don't have to worry about cars or crossing intersections or streets. As much as I'm against putting your AirPods on and walking where you can't hear somebody or footsteps coming up behind you, you are in the public view at a lot of these places. It's not very desolate, so I get it. And it's nice areas to walk. I see people doing it all the time. We've done it. But you have these e-bikes zipping around, and to what end? And they're just becoming more available. They're becoming cheaper, so more people are getting them to where they used to be, a higher dollar luxury. And how long before something like we've seen in New York City, especially if they're talking a railroad coming here? Which, again, with the leadership in New York City coming down the road, I will fight tooth and nail against. But, how long before we see city bikes on the sides of the roads where you can, they got docking stations and you scan a SKU code on your phone and you rent it and drive it around the city? We don't have the infrastructure for it. I don't think they'd hold up on Scranton roads because of how bad they are. But if they do get their act together as far as roads go, I could see it. If they do start getting the activity and growth that they want and say they want, is this the next step? What about a smaller company that says, we're only going to put 15 bikes in downtown Scranton? And then, those 15 bikes and that company's successful. Well, you get another company, I'm going to get 20 bikes. And then you get another company, we're going to do this. And that's how this flourishes. I mean, if you've been to New York City and tried to walk around with these e-bikes and e-scooters, it's out of control. And it's already, here's an article in our local, this is 16 News covering this. And their headline is a growing problem that officials are looking to solve. We're getting comments from borough administrators, mayors, borough managers, chiefs of police, just trying to find out the best way is to help us prevent these from becoming more and more dangerous issues, said operations director for the Lackawanna River Heritage Valley Trail. Now, the answer could be as easy as no motorized vehicles on the trail. Okay, well then who's enforcing it? What's the enforcement mechanism? Are different townships going to have different rules or different fines or different policies? Is there authority to confiscate these scooters? Just catching them is a major problem with the ATVs and dirt bikes, to where some police agencies had to get their own assets to be able to try and catch up to these dirt bikes and ATVs. So even the simplest answer does not always result in a simple solution. You need people that are going to abide by those rules. Rules that aren't enforced aren't rules at all. So it's an issue coming down our way. This is the heritage trail at this point. But how long before it's city bikes in downtown Scranton or some of our other boroughs or Main Street in Dixon City and other places like that? I've seen them riding up and down Main Street in Dixon City through the different towns. So they're here. When do we decide it's a problem or not? It's 5:56 here at WILK. We'll be back. It's funny because as we were talking about that last story, I just had a text message and I just had three go by me in the back mountain. I yelled, "Wheelie!" Two of them were still on the back wheel when I turned. Yeah, they're around, so be careful. And again, hopefully you're not driving them around with earpods or earbuds in or headphones on. Even more dangerous for everybody involved. But that's it for the Rob O'Donnell Show today on WILK News Radio. Remember, if you missed any of today's show, you want to hear it later, tomorrow, you want to talk about it with your friends over the weekend and listen, get the Odyssey app. You can go back and listen. If not, you go anywhere you get your favorite podcast, just search the Rob O'Donnell Show, and you can hear the podcast of the show, which is the same, a little different, but it's broken into segments, hour segments for each show. So there's three podcasts there, and usually the longer segments are put into individual podcasts. You're going to get anywhere between 3 and 5 podcasts a day that are uploaded each evening. So check us out there. If you didn't hear us all today, or if you thought you missed something, and again, that Odyssey app's always got a rewind feature where you can go back and listen. So other than that, enjoy this weekend. It's going to be a great weekend. Tonight's going to be a great night. Weather's going to be nice. Make the best of it. Hug your loved ones. Tell someone you care about them that you do. And have a great recharged weekend. That's what I'm looking to do. I'll see you on the flip side. God bless. Be safe. We'll see you on Monday.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.